Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chad Brown here. You may remember me as a linebacker in the NFL or as a reptile breeder and the owner of Pro Exotics. I've been herping since I was a boy, and I've dedicated my life to advancing the industry and educating the community about the importance of reptiles. I also love to encourage the joy of breeding and keeping reptiles as a hobbyist, which is why my partner Robin Markland and I created the Reptile Report. The Reptile Report is our online news aggregation site bringing you the most up-to-date discussions from the reptile world. Visit thereptilereport.com every day to stay on top of the latest reptile news and information. We encourage you to visit the site and submit your exciting reptile news, photos, and links so we can feature outstanding breeders and hobbyists just like you. The Reptile Report offers powerful branding and marketing exposure for your business, and the best part is, it's free. If you're a buyer or a breeder, you gotta check out the Reptile Report Marketplace. The Marketplace is the reptile world's most complete buying and selling destination, full of features to help put you in touch with the perfect deal. Find exactly what you're looking for with our advanced search system. Search by sex, weight, morph, or other keywords, and use our Buy It Now option to buy that animal right now. Go to marketplace.thereptilereport.com and register your account for free. Be sure to link your Marketplace account to your Ship Your Reptiles account to earn free tokens with each shipping label you book. Use the Marketplace to sell your animals and supplies and maximize your exposure with a platinum ad that also gets fed to the Reptile Report and our powerful Marketplace Facebook page. Buying or selling? Use shipyourreptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rate. ShipYourReptiles.com can also supply you with the materials needed to safely ship your animals successfully. Use ShipYourReptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rates, the materials needed to ship your reptiles successfully, live customer support, and our live, on-time arrival insurance program. We got you covered. Visit thereptilereport.com to learn or share about the animals. Click on the link to the marketplace, find that perfect pet or breeder, then visit shipreptiles.com to ship that animal anywhere in the United States. We are your one-stop shop for everything reptile related.
McIntyre with me today is, he's not here. Oh, hold on, actually, is Eric Bird.
Hey.
You're on. Eric,
hey.
Are you still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
See, what everyone needs to know is that Eric was so afraid I was going to ruin the show. He's actually calling from the deepest jungles of Africa where he's doing his UNICEF work, feeding the hungry. Eric, how's it going down there?
It's going good, man. It's hot and... That's how I like it. You know, after
Eric's
the winter we had, man, I'm loving it.
Eric's actually in the Florida Everglades where it's, you are a reptile nut. It's one of those places that you desperately want to go. Has your wife hauled you off of, like, talked you out of jumping off a dock onto an alligator yet? Or, you know, doing a Steve Irwin thing?
I have one question, though, man. Why don't we live here? You know, like, I don't understand.
Because have you seen me? I'm nothing but... pale skin, freckles, and red hair. You have any idea what the Florida sun would do to me? It'd be horrible.
Dude, dude, this is like the reptile capital of the world, well, at least the U.S., no, maybe not the world.
Well, then, yeah, there's roving herds of iguana and shit running around. Of course it is.
Dude,
but,
it's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, I just was calling in to wish you guys to have a good show, and, you know, it'll be fun to listen to, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you had to call in because, you know, I called in from Anchorage, and you're just down in the Florida Everglades, so, you know, you had to call
in. Yeah, I kind of felt bad.
Yeah, it's all right. Okay. But you know what's fun is I can do this.
At least you didn't play the dark side.
No, I have the ones that are I don't want labeled. I memorized them quickly. So yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, and we'll like return you to your vacation and enjoy yourself. And remember, I want about 200 pounds of Burmese python and at least 5 American crocodiles. Not American alligators, because I'll know the difference. So get me American crocodiles. I don't care that they're hideously endangered and all that fun stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll see you in a week, I guess.
You will. If anybody is in the area, I am hosting a garage sale at Eric's place while he's gone. I'm also selling some albino zebras, so.
Yeah, I gotta give a quick little story about those real quick before I jump off. So, you know, I've been waiting for these things to hatch out forever. And, mm-hmm. you know, like I was just telling you, there was one still left in the egg as I was leaving, but fortunately that one hatched out as well. So, you know, I feel like with my odds the past couple years, I've been kicked in the gut, not necessarily getting what, you know, I wanted or whatever. But I hit 3 albino zebra jacks and 3 albino zebras.
Wow.
The zebra jack had albino, and I think there was 3 zebras had albino, and one, I think it might be a zebra or it might be just a normal carpet, but I'm pretty damn sure.
Racial zebra,
like,
the chest, up, man.
Yeah.
Pretty damn good odds.
Yeah, and I was telling you the story that, you know, it's like, I remember like years ago, even just dreaming about an albino carpet was just like, you know, it was untouchable, man. You couldn't even think about it. And to have them hatching out of my incubator just blows my mind. It just blows my mind. I can't get over it, you know. So there you go. That's my story for the week. And have a good show.
All right, man. We'll see you soon. Have fun, all right?
I'm sure to send you pics.
Stop it, all right? It's annoying. I'm at my desk today, and you're like, look at the scenery. I'm like, you. So, yeah, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I promise you don't. All right?
Yeah, I do. All right, man. Have a good show, guys.
All right, we'll see you.
All right,
so real quick, without any further ado, let's bring on the guests for tonight. First guest is Chris Foley, who many of you know is the second half of Rogue, probably the crazier half, the stuff that gets bit a lot. And here he is. Chris, you're on.
Hey.
And the second guest is, of course, it seems to be kind of like the backup host right now. And every time we need something, we just kind of grab him, is Mr. Rob Stone. Rob, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
We're doing okay. So we're on right now. Eric's gone. So let's all go around and share the most embarrassing story we have of Eric. Now we got nothing. So anyway,
that's just me.
It's anyway. We'll have plenty because we're going to go to Daytona this year. So once that happens, we'll get him good and liquored up. So we'll have something for these kind of shows. Anyway, but we had a few topics that some of the people were writing in and talking about or wanted us to discuss today. One of which is partnerships in the reptile industry. Everyone's kind of talking about how it could be an up and a down. People are seeing the pros, people are seeing the cons. I know I've discussed with Eric a few times. Chris and I are actually doing a partnership because he runs the half a Rogue and I run the other half. And Rob, I think you're on your own, right? Do you have a partner? Did you have one at one point?
I actually split with my good buddy Tom Weaver for probably more or less 8 or 9 years. And so, no, I think I have some thoughts, too. So I think we should be good. We can hit some good stuff there.
Excellent. So we actually have a show. Holy crap. Anyway, turns out.
Wow.
We succeeded. All right. Anyway, but the whole thing is, I guess, would be, first off, what are some of the pros you can see in this? Because, I mean, the big pro that I can see is that there are obviously some species that are limited by what I can work with. My snake room's only so big. And also, I can only do so much. So the big pro that I have with the fact of working with Chris is that I don't have to have all the animals with me. Half of them go with him. I mean, he's got our entire white lip project and our scrub project. So those animals are completely with him. I don't even need to pay them any kind of a mind. It allows me to focus on breeding the animals I have, and it allows him to solely focus on these hard-to-breed animals. So I guess a big pro I would see of it is that, you know, I don't have to bust my ass and have a room full of pissed off animals. You know, that's his job. So, Rob, what would you kind of see to be one of the pros of it?
Well, I think you make a good point. First, I want to derail the show a little bit and just say hey to Chris, and that I wanted to ask him if this was the first time back since the invention of the Morelia drinking it. And if either way, really, I think we need to, you know, move into that. I know I pulled up a tasty beverage, and I really hope you two did the same.
Well, if I'm going to do this like Eric does it, I have to be like 3 sheets to the wind before we even start. So you guys talk, I'll quick start drinking.
Okay, that sounds good. What do I have to say? So Howard needs to call, so that would be – that.
Yes, Howard needs to call. I don't know Howard's number.
We need to talk about passion.
Passion. I have to mispronounce a bunch of people's name. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Where is that? I got to find the whole document of that and print that up somewhere. Frame it.
I think you make a great point. I think ultimately, to my mind and from my experience, I think – so I guess one distinction would be that Tom and I did not do the whole site A, site B thing more than having maybe a couple, you know, most of the stuff was at his place. And I just had I had some Acrocordis and stuff at the house that was just kind of, you know, just hanging out in a tank, something enjoyable for me. As opposed to kind of the approach that you guys have taken. And I think what you're doing makes a lot of sense. And I mean, heck, dude, even if you have just the vagaries of life, right? Chris had just moved, right, and is finally kind of getting settled.
Yeah. He used to be – now, how close were you? Like, what, 20 minutes up the road?
Yeah, if that.
And now you're about, like, what, an hour? With traffic?
An hour and a half, yeah.
Yeah. So he's a little bit of a haul, but, you know, that's the other thing is that they're kind of almost – if you're going to do this whole site A, site B thing, there has to be some form of a trust going on there. Otherwise, you know – if you don't trust the other guy to not kill everything, it's kind of defeats the purpose.
Or not sell it and say that he did kill it, or whatever.
Exactly. You know, I'm not. You know, I've known Chris since I was a freshman in college. I don't think he's going to like all of a sudden drop off the face of the planet after selling all the whitelets and scrubs and skip town. If he does, that'll be a really nice shock to me. But you know,
see, the funny thing is, everything that Owen thinks has ever passed away at his house is actually living in my basement.
Damn it! I knew it. kind of needs to be that.
Right, I mean, and I think that's kind of the natural limiting factor, right? Not on, like, I suppose to some extent, but to a lesser extent on a project-based level of saying, maybe Eric has a particular animal that you guys want to try and match up with a particular animal that you have that would be a better pairing. Or maybe it's just he has an extra male and you have a female that would go with it, but he also has a couple females, something like that. That's obviously there's trust there, but that's not the same level of trust as saying, what's mine is yours, and vice versa. And I think that's really the limiting factor, and it's a tough thing. And I don't think, you know, I think when people say partnership, mostly they mean kind of we'll partner on a project as opposed to partner, you know, in general, like you guys are doing or like I did with Tom. And I think that's, you know, it makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, heck, sometimes, certainly, you know, Tom and I developed out of my moving to a location where I couldn't keep the stuff. And I know, Owen, you had a lot of or all of the stuff when Chris was in flux or whatever. And I think that's kind of the frequent stimulus to do it is, okay, well, everything wound up under one roof, and now let's go from there, as opposed to kind of the idea from the get-go, because I think that's a bit too, maybe a bit too businessy or a bit too, you know, it seems too money-driven or something like that. I don't know, but it has that kind of a feel, I think.
Yeah, and I could definitely see where being money-driven, it's almost like if you were to get into it just because, you know, hey, man, if you buy into these snakes with me, we're going to make tons of money. And, of course,
right,
we all know
that. The money, I mean.
Exactly. Snakes are never a gold mine, guaranteed.
And not that that's a bad thing, right? I mean, fundamentally, it's not a bad thing at all. I think didn't Justin and Ben kind of started out that way? They pitched together on some pods or some pet pods or something like that. And so, obviously, that's worked out great for them. And, you know, I think it can totally work. But I think, you know, those are a couple great guys as opposed to being the idea that made that work. You know what I mean?
Right, and also the fact that it could be something like, you know, if I promise you, there have been more times I've seen breeders who have partners that are not even involved in reptiles, who are like financiers, and those are the people who always end up falling by the wayside because now the financier wants the payment back, but maybe the babies aren't ready or maybe something aren't selling or something else, and that's how the people end up going away. It's how breeders end up somehow leaving. So if you're going to pick a partner, you know, having somebody, a financial backer, is all good, but you know, be careful. It might be one of those situations where they're going to want payment and you're not ready to make that back. So it's almost like you really want to have somebody who's really into reptiles along with you who's going to understand that it's going to take a bit or really not just care and just be happy to be involved in the reptile industry, in the company, so.
Right. Well, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say I really, you know, split right down the middle with that. Kind of take both sides where I've been in obviously this partnership, but I've also been in other business partnerships that were, you know, not related to animals and were more financially driven, where there was a lot more pressure, a lot more stress, and a different relationship, as you would call it. If there's a financial motive behind it, there's a lot more to look into.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the biggest nightmare of my life as far as a business relationship where finances were the priority. But as far as the reptile goes, it's really finding somebody who shares your passion for the industry, somebody that you trust, and somebody that you can tolerate. I'm a gigantic asshole. You know, I'll be the first one to say it. You know, I the first place that I got, I had a handful of roommates, and I went through a dozen roommates, and I ended up hating all of them, and they all hated me. And somehow I was the only one that put up with my shit.
Well, you and I only roomed together in college, and I refused to move into that house for probably that reason.
I used to wake you up at 4 o'clock in the morning and shine a light bulb in your face. Who puts up with that shit?
Yeah, that got annoying.
I used to throw stuff at him while he was sleeping because I was bored. But the long story short of that is, you know, we've been through a lot of other bad shit, too, as far as the friendship goes, and this was the common ground that just always kept us together, and there's a lot of faith on both sides. If this was financially driven, I'd be freaking the hell out because I might not get a clutch from any of these animals for years. And Owen threatens my life that I better get white lip egg this year. But if
all
I don't, he's going to understand, and we're going to move on next year, and we're still going to be successful.
All the damn time. I built an incubator and said, now guess what's going in here? So, you know, it's one of those things. But it almost feels like you take the ease off of it by it not being the financially driven thing. Of course, you have to care about those finances, but they can't be the sole. I almost feel like it'd be harder if it was the sole purpose. You know, you'd expect to do well.
Yeah, I mean, we'd probably be a lot more stressed out if we didn't have Owen stuff that, you know, he's had a good track record with, and he's been able to bring some income into the business. I think if we had a whole room of my stuff, we'd be in panic mode, so we wouldn't be able to stay afloat. But
Brett, well, I was curious about that. I wanted to talk to you guys about that. How do you, you know, plan a breeding business around kind of breeding rare stuff, or maybe not so much rare, but rare and challenging, you know, stuff, so that you end up saying, I mean, shoot, dude, you know, I know it's sure a lot easier to invest in new projects and even get new equipment and all that stuff if you have something, anything that, you know, you can turn over at a rate. If you're hatching stuff, you know, having been this way all of last year and, you know, pretty much all the time to some extent, like, if you are just paying for stuff from your job money, it's, you know, $600 is a lot more than if you kind of created that out of, three or four, you know, Jaguar carpet pythons or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot more money than if you did that.
The what we got with the rarer stuff, I mean, you know, obviously the rarer stuff includes the whitelips, the scrubs, and then for right now, probably the liasis, because we haven't had success with them, so I'm kind of pegging them that way until we can nail it down. But, you know, we're at least good for about four or five carpet clutches. We're getting about six this year, and that's always good. So, and
yeah,
of course, I have the other projects, which are the corn snakes, which are a good swift, you know, couple hundred bucks by the end of the day. So,
yeah, that's the bread and butter stuff that really keeps us afloat. I would say a lot of the rarer stuff, it really was out of pocket money. I mean, I know that's not really the goal with any business, but it's something that you consider when you decide that you want to expand. And
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, fortunately,
and, you know,
we've made some phenomenal contacts along the way that have worked out some, you know, extraordinary deals. Everybody from, you know, David Means to, you know, Buddy Buscemi, and I don't even know what else we've gotten at this point, but we've been, you know, really, really blessed by the people we've come in contact with in this industry as far as that rare stuff goes.
To be honest, the one thing that was the complete shift for the company itself wasn't me and Chris partnering up. It was me deciding to become a co-host for this crazy short guy a couple blocks away on a radio show. I mean, doing that is what propelled us in a completely different direction with the animals we got involved in, with the people that we spoke to and talked to, with all the things that we did. It honestly is what exploded. But it almost comes from knowing the people around the industry, which I tell people lots of times, you know, how do I get involved? I'm like, just go to shows and talk to people. Just get online and talk to people. Just engage people, and you'll build up your reputation, and you'll enjoy it. And, you know, Chris will be the first one to tell you that I'm terrified of what the reputation for the company and us are out there. So, you know, if somebody ever complains about a baby they got from us, I lose my damn mind. So it's one of those things where the rarer stuff kind of takes a backseat. You know, we try and we see what we can do, and hopefully we get success. But the other things that, you know, we can breed successfully year in and year out are what propels us forward. And we try not to spend our own money on new projects, but that normally means that we have to wait until around June to probably about October, when the babies are really kind of selling and popping and going, to when we add the projects. Like right now, we're, you know, trying to sell a bunch of the super caramels, other stuff, to fund other projects. So some people need to buy some super caramels.
Well, I mean, that's always the difficulty, though, right? Doesn't the thing that you want or have wanted for years and years, right? There's no good timing
on
that. That always shows up on the list, you know?
Exactly. It's like I finally finished off paying off the Chondro, which, you know, knocked us down to, all right, now our spending money's gone until we sell a few more babies. So I finally finished up paying off my female chondro, and then, goddammit, like, baby water pythons fell from the sky, and we needed one of those. And I'm like, son of a bitch. So, you know, it's one of those things where we try not to, but sometimes, you know, one of us will call each other and be like, so I got this. And it's like, oh, all right. Like a couple, about a month ago, I called him. I'm like, I got a pair of Amazon tree boas. And he's like, why did you? I'm like, it was there. I had pocket money. I wanted them.
That's exactly
shut
how
up.
That went.
Yeah, that is exactly, yeah. And so, did you get the colored one? No. What the hell? So, yeah, I mean, you know, it was one of those things. So.
You just wanted to be able to get another pair in a month or 2 months. That's why you didn't get the colored one.
I did. Yeah. It's so, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's, you got, because also, babies equal rat money. You know, we try to get it so that, you know, we have our spending money for babies, and we have the money that we have to spend on the rat order. And the rat order split between the two of us is pretty substantial. But
I want to cry.
You guys keep stuff that actually eats. I forgot about that. You know, it's a lot easier when you keep stuff that just, you know, you feed
eats.
6 minutes.
Yeah, and, you know, mine eat like goddamn horses. So, you know, and his, you know, here's the, he has to, with the scrubs, I know Chris keeps them, like, lean and scrubby, like, body type, but those things will eat themselves to death. I mean, you know, they don't shy away from food. They're thin because we
That's
keep
true.
Them thin, you know, but they'll eat anything. So.
Including my face.
Yeah, it's true. That's
well,
why, it's like,
rats,
yeah, it's all
too, right? I mean, like, rats are just, they're expensive, dude. I, you know, saw the banner ad on Kingsnake or whatever, and it's $1.75 for a medium rat,
yeah,
or a small rat or
and,
something. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be a good deal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and
crazy.
What sucks is that the rat prices fluctuate depending on the market. I mean, Chris and I'll talk about the one time when they have the ball python bump up, where all the ball python breeders start feeding their females again. So small rats are more expensive than, you know, largest, because that's what everybody's trying to buy. So it's one of those things where you kind of got to watch out for that stuff. But you got to figure that into it as well.
So you get your stuff locally, right? Is that right? Or you still
yeah, we get our, we got our guys. We have local guys. We get them at shows. We
yeah,
get
yeah.
a pretty good deal because he's the only guy we go to. So he hooks us up. But
I mean, it's still not cheap.
People,
how many snakes you got
no.
between the two of you in terms of big stuff, not the little babies and stuff?
How much you got now?
Big stuff, probably 18.
18. I'm probably sitting pretty at another, I think I'm between 20 and 30 at this point. I don't
yeah,
know, I have to count.
All that
I don't
stuff
like
every
counting.
Other week or every week or something like that?
I usually feed the girls every week, and then the boys I'll feed when they look hungry, if they're an adult male. If it's a juvenile male, they get fed, like, every week, maybe every other, depending on their size. But some of our bigger boys, like our 7-8 foot carpet males, you know, they'll get a rat when I decide that, hey, I got an extra rat,
them,
you know,
yeah.
it's,
sure.
yeah. So, there's no point
yeah,
in
I mean,
doing
that. Yeah, I mean, that can't be cheap. I see why you need to produce some stuff and sell some stuff, because that can't be cheap.
Eric keeps talking about trying to breed our own rats, and I keep telling him he's crazy. So, you know, I'm like, I already spent 2 hours in the snake room as is. I'm not going to spend another hour in a rat room afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I do the mice, and I find that to be really straightforward and easy. But, I have good luck with mice, not really rats. It seems like you're good at one or the other. But
Eric suggested that we take shifts taking care of them every other weekend, and the way I see it is that every other weekend, Eric takes our shift, so then we're in good shape.
Every other weekend, I pay Eric to go do my shift, yeah. So it's one of those things. But I guess that would be some of the pros of having a partnership, is you can kind of get more animals, you can kind of spread the wealth, and you don't have to necessarily do everything. I mean, I know there are certain points where I'll send Chris to talk to a breeder, or call this guy to finish up a project, or I'll even contact somebody and say, hey, my buddy Chris is going to call you and do all that stuff. But I guess the dark side of it would be if you have somebody who doesn't really, I don't know, pull the weight, or somebody who you didn't realize is kind of a scummy, scummy person. I mean, the last thing you want is to bring somebody in and have – as in like bring in imported animals, mites, or tarnish your reputation. What are some of the other things you guys would think you want to watch out for?
I mean, kind of where you were going sums it up, because we have kind of a unique trust cycle where you never ask me who I talk to, I never ask you who I talk to, because we're an extension of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we pretty much know what each other would say in each situation. But if you don't know me and I'm going out and I'm labeling your animals wrong, because goddammit, I still don't know the name of even the animals I have here when you name them all.
That is true. Yeah, you need name tags for your own shit. So, you know.
It's really just understanding your role, because at some point you're always going to have a bigger role than me, even if I'm successful with all of these rare animals. You're still the face of Rogue, and I'm never going to have a problem with that. But if I was somebody else and I got in the mix and I unsettled the situation, you never know which way it can go. And once you tarnish your reputation,
true,
it's hard to get it back.
True. And I mean, there's also, what was it, a few places. Didn't Prehistoric Pet get, like, robbed by a few of their employees? Like, they stole some higher-end animals, like had albino this or something that. I mean, there's always that kind of thing.
I think 10 or 12 years ago, I did a retic loan with a guy that I knew in Philly, and he ran off my retic, and I never found him again.
Yeah, so that would be the same kind of stuff you might want to watch out for if you're going to get into a partnership.
Yeah, I guess that's and that's more the partnerships that Rob was talking about, when you're not necessarily talking about starting a business together, but, you know, doing a breeding loan per se or a project here or there. I would think at least that, you know, with the exception of, like, us working with Eric or something like that, you know, a breeding loan or what have you, you probably know that person a little bit less than if you were going to a full-fledged partnership with them.
Yeah, you'd want to,
yeah,
I mean breeding loans are different. I mean, you have breeding loan agreements and stuff like that, and, of course, you could always enter in a contract with a partnership, but, you know, it's something else you need to consider.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think in terms of the business partnership thing, I think that's really pretty, is or should be, or certainly my experience, your guys' experience, is just something that develops naturally out of someone you're, like, very good friends with. You know what I mean? That's not just, oh, random dude, yeah, we should buy some snakes together. Like, that just seems...
hey, you there. Yeah, look, you know, it's...
right. Like, I mean, that just seems like a terrible plan, you know? So I think the... And I think the, you know, the hidden aspect of this, and I'm sure Chris will remember this name from Blast from the Past, you know, like, you can certainly make some money breeding reptiles, but, like, the famous Joe Lewis, you know, Rare Earth line, right,
yeah,
what's the best way to make $1 million? And this is a guy who made millions of dollars, developing the agave or some sort of thing, right? Oh, aloe vera, right? He was one of the chemists who worked out the aloe vera thing that all of a sudden was all over the place. And he was getting dimes on all those purchases. Like, his direct quote, right? What's the best way to make $1 million breeding reptiles? Spend $2 million, right? Like, you can do it,
right?
But, like, it's definitely, it's hit or miss, right? You know, and it's unlike almost any other business, right? Like, if it goes right, our expected returns, you'd have stockbrokers, you know, cutting off their own fucking nuts for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it goes right.
Yeah.
But I mean, and look, are there people out there that are running this like a business and being successful? There absolutely is. We're talking, you know, the way we're speaking now is almost contradictory to the business world, because we're almost speaking from the hobbyist side and not the business person side. There is an opportunity for that, but the one thing that this business has in common with every business is you need an appropriate business plan. And you need to calculate your risks, and your risks are considerably high here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, heck, but it seems like a lot of the actual businesses that do well in terms of actually making a profit, right, and I guess the distinction that I see, or the, you know, the frequent issue, is the distinction between good cash flow and actual profit. You know, that's kind of a common reptile or pet store deal, right? Is that's
right,
a, that's a
right.
critical distinction.
Yeah.
And I would say that the places that do well frequently do the supply end stuff. They do feeders, you know, like that's where pet stores make their bucks for sure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you believe me, you definitely can. And I mean, heck, we see guys who have done it for years and then guys who've done it for slightly less years and whatever. It's certainly a thing. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying even in our best years, the year we did, just short of 80,000 in sales, like, you know, that profit on that after all the animal purchases and money to Cameron, the expenditures on caging all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like 35 or 4 grand, you know, $3,500 or $4,000 on 80 in sales in a single year, right? And it's like, well, could you do better if you were selling more of what you produce, blah, blah, blah? You certainly could. That was us having a lot of fun, and that was kind of the point. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't run as a true business. It was run as a business, but not a true business, a business hobby. Kind of, I think, what Eric's doing, and I'm not sure, you know, relative to what you guys are doing, only you guys know what, you know, where you're at on that profit versus cash flow scale. I'm sure it sounds like you're doing great. You know, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that's always the trick, right?
Yeah, well, the trick is always, I mean, for the first 2 years I was doing snake shows, everybody would ask me, like, you know, how'd you do? And I'd be like, oh, good, we sold a bunch, you know, sold a few, da-da-da-da. Like, now you ask me how we did, I'll be like, shows sucked, and I'll walk away. I mean, like, you know, because something I was always told when I was growing up is that, you know, you always pretend like you're doing great because no one ever wants to do business with a guy who's not doing good business or not doing well, so... I always just kind of lie. And, you know, the first couple of years of shows, I was bringing hatchling carpets that were gray and tiny and had shed. And, you know, obviously the first couple shows, I didn't sell anything to these little worms. So it took a bit. And it's a learning curve. So that was kind of where I went with that. But you learn the tricks, you learn what works for you, and you just kind of let it ride. So also, people again tend to notice you more and more. I have a bunch of people at the shows who don't even do carpet pythons who come up to me and offer me stuff or ask me questions because they know I do. And it's just, you know, one of those things. So kind of can't run it like a business because it's not. I mean, you're selling livestock, you're selling animals. Also, you got to run it as a farm. So it's... kind of got to pretend you got livestock, so.
Right, which is a real business. I mean, people certainly do it, but the, you know, kind of the point that gets that it's easy for us to lose because kind of the way the intermittent nature of what we do is that, you know, most farms run on really tight margin, you know, and I think it's easy for us to look and say, hey, I hatched out a pair of these baby rhinos and they sell for $750 a piece plus shipping, you know. Oh, that's great, you know, and it's, at the same time, you look and say, well, actually, I only had, you know, 10 pair of those for the whole year, and that was all I produced, and I wanted to buy new cages and these 2 pair of snakes, and, well, that was the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And then also, Chris is one of the people that will, I always forget to take this into account, but he'll kind of remind me is how much money we put into the baby to get it big enough to get it ready to sell. So I'm just like, oh, yeah, super caramel, it's, you know, caramel's $200, and it'll be $200 for, like, till it's 2 years old. And then Chris
months,
is
right.
Like, Chris is like, how much rat did we feed that thing while it was here? I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, well, goddamn it. So it's like the prices need to be adjusted for how long it stays with you. So it's one of those things that I think other people kind of don't take into account is as it gets older, they start slashing prices, and that's where you start to lose money. And that's one of the things you need to consider if you're going to try to do this as a business deal. I mean, if you're somebody who has maybe 4 chondros in their basement and they don't mind and they just breed those little chondros and they never keep any babies and they sell them for a certain price, you can totally not listen to me and what I'm saying because you don't care and you're happy. But if you've got a bunch of animals and you're expecting these animals to at least help you
pay for their care and need and also, you know, your various reptile desires, you're going to want to keep track of that stuff. Like, I have Tinley booked for me to go out there. We haven't booked at the table yet, but I'm kind of hoping that a few of the sales that Rogue does this summer will help offset buying my plane ticket. If not, it is tax deductible, and I intend to ride that shit out. So anyway.
Well, I mean, sure, you know, and I totally am with you as to, oh, well, the price needs to go up based on the expenditures you have into that, even in terms of utilities and all that different portioned out stuff. The issue becomes, well, dude, maybe the market on those has just collapsed. You know what I mean? And so you need, now it went from, oh, it was 200 and now you need to get 230 based on your costs, but now the market is 80 bucks and dropping, and you know, it's kind of one of those deals then where you can have your 230, I need to get 230, but in reality the innate value in terms of meat on this stuff, right? Eugene's thing, like, well, it's $2 on meat, you know, what's the innate value? And so then you that's where it gets complicated and confusing, and it's just kind of where it's different than a lot of other established markets, right? You know, most markets aren't that prone to radical change off of, you know, a very few actors. I mean, certainly there are some, right? You can make the argument that some of our, you know, stock markets and different different things of that nature are, right? The pork belly, if you have one big movement, or even sports betting or whatever you want to say, but it's kind of not fundamentally in the same way that you, Owen, throwing up a price on Kingsnake for a super caramel that's a quarter of what everyone else says could crush it with, just that, you wouldn't even have to have any. You could do it just, you know, you could pretend you did, and when people emailed you, you said, hey, it's sold out, or I don't have pictures, or whatever. It happened before.
But the other thing is that you don't need to understand is that we're also in competition with the other breeders that are producing the animals that we're producing, but we're also, like, within a gentleman's agreement to not screw them, because otherwise that is how you lose friends very quickly in this industry, and then you're like, I almost want to say blacklisted. You know, no one's going to want to sell you. No one's going to do business with you. Your reputation is going to be tarnished. So you can't – I could go on to Kingsnake tonight and say buy one, get one free, super caramel Jags, $500 a pop. And, you know, because then if I sold out all of them, that would make up for all the food I need to spend for the year. It would take a huge chunk out of the caging bill that we racked up, and I'd be a happy camper. But no one would like
to talk about
those
zebras that we wholesaled for $100.
Eric zebras? Yeah, those are gone. Now we're going to pause because Eric is listening to this probably tomorrow and is now just like gripped his steering wheel to the point of his knuckles are probably bleeding. So it's okay.
That
was
the albino zebras. They were just fresh out of the egg. We sent them over to underground.
Yeah.
It's no big deal. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I gave one to Rob for some rhinos, so he's awesome.
He's pretty good.
That's sweet, dude. I love those things. What
the
kind of rhino are those, Rob?
Sorry, what's that?
What got you into those, the rhinos?
I got them, so I used to work, well, I guess I first seen them, right, I think pretty much same as everybody. Chad and Robin had bought some in from, so they were Klaus babies in 98 that Cameron brought in. So they got a decent-sized group. I mean, I want to say 6 to 8 animals in that first year, and I think they were the first in the U.S. to breed them in 2001. And within, I guess, a year or two of that, I was working there, and they started seeing some blister issues in some of those animals, and there are a couple tracks that might be from, and we can hit that again. We can come back to that. But anyway, so they had them, and I was working there, and they said, hey, we're seeing problems. They've had some success, and then they started seeing some problems, and said, hey, do you want to purchase the group that we have of, I think, 5 pair, with 4 of those pair being adults in 2003 or early 2004 for $5,000. And actually that was when Tom and I basically got together. I had given him my animals before I went to Tulane in the fall of 2003, and then in 2004, said, hey, let's spend this dough, which, you know, in a certain sense, neither of us sort of had a loan, and then we recovered some of that by selling a pair or two of those, and I've had them ever since, and I still have, you know, one beautiful blue female that was from that first Klaus breeding in 1998. She's a hell of a snake.
Nice.
She's rabid right now.
That's awesome.
We should get rhinos.
I agree.
That's an executive rogue decision that was just made on air. So, yeah. We should get rhinos. Anyway. But, no, that's cool. And like you said, it was kind of born out of opportunity. And the like what you were hitting on before, the partnership almost comes from somebody you trust. And, I mean, it every year we get emails about people who may have bought one or two snakes from us prior or talked to me maybe once on the phone about buying a snake, and they have a carpet python, and they're wanting to know if they send it up to me, if I'll breed it with my carpet pythons and split the clutch with them. And it's almost like I feel bad saying no, but I always end up saying no because I kind of don't know you, and you're sending me your snake, and yada, yada, yada. And I really only will do breeding projects with people I know and trust and who are somewhat close by and are willing to, you know, notify me if something goes wrong, because there could be a ton of things go wrong. And I know the Fauna Board of Inquiry is full of various things of people who have disappeared while animals of horrendous value were on breeding loan to them. And,
yeah, you're not kidding.
It's one of those things.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's a thing. I think, you know, from my own experience doing that sort of stuff for, you know, outside the Tom stuff, so outside the business, you know, kind of shared business aspect, doing just loans of particular animals, and I just think, in a certain sense, my experience would be that it's just, since you're dealing with living animals, and in most cases, right, people aren't sending babies. So we're back into the issue of sending adults, and you're working with adults that you didn't raise and aren't used to your conditions, and maybe they were raised out with you guys where you have a high relative humidity, and you send them to me. The next thing you know, the thing's chronically dehydrated, not because of my conditions, but my conditions relative to kind of how it spent the first 10 years of its life. And I, you know, that certainly egg binding in snakes obtained as adults is something I've seen living in a dry place, you know, and have moved away from it, like I know you guys have too. And I think, as I say, people don't frequently send, hey, I just bought this choice baby, you know, here you go, Owen, come back to me in 7 years, and hopefully you'll produce some stuff. It's,
right.
Hey, I've had this thing that I've been striking out with, but you've been having some success with something similar, so maybe you can make some magic, and that would be great. You know, I'm really it's kind of a wing and a prayer situation, but, you know, at the same time, I'm going to put the pressure on you, say, hey, I get half the stuff if it works out, and honestly, dude, I don't think it's a great idea, to be honest, but people do it and will do it, and I understand why. It's just, I think over time, most people will view it two ways, right? One would be, you produce this awesome clutch, and then it's, oh, I got to give half what, you know, give away half the babies.
I got to leave, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, and I understand, you know, a lot of the Condor guys do it, and, hey, we're pairing this animal with this animal, and I think that's a great idea, and it can work out great. Like, my buddies Jason and Ryan, they, you know, Ryan buys this stuff and sends it over to Jason and says, make it work, and they, you know, it just seems to work every time, and they're producing awesome stuff and whatever, but that's definitely the exception, not the rule. And I think that's largely driven by the fact that they're, you know, a 20-minute drive from each other, not halfway across the country.
Not hours. I mean, and then also with I think you're also correct with the, some breeders just don't have luck, so they just send them away with kind of like toe tag agreements. We got one of our white lip males from Sean that way, with the whole, like, take him because I don't have a girl, and you guys have three girls, and you're going to be doing this, trying to breed them, so take them, and then when you get babies, cut me in for a pair at this amount. And we're like, sure. And then
Nick called me. I called Nick to ask him about prices for carbon python. This is why I have not called Nick since. Is I called him and I asked him, like, what are we going to set the prices at? And he said, yeah, we're going to set them at this. Man, I got to clear out some snakes. I'm like, yeah, I hear that. He goes, you do white lips? And I'm like, I do. And he's like, do you want a pair? And I'm like, I do. And then, you know, I hung up the phone. And I'm like, crap, I got to call Chris now and tell him I just agreed to a pair of white lip pythons. And
I was and then tell me how much I owe.
Yeah, I tell him he's on the hook for this much now. I mean, and all I was supposed to do was talk to Nick about prices. So it's one of those things where sometimes the opportunity just knocks, but it, just by knowing certain people, you can get into projects, and it's one of those things where, you know, the banes of my existence are my Iron Jay carpet pythons. I hate them. I hate them so much. But Eric is like a wizard with these things. Like, you didn't even be like, he closes his eyes and they breed. So I'm going to like drop them off at his doorstep next breeding season in a box and refuse to take them back until he gets them to do something. So, and I don't care if he takes half the clutch, that's just where we're at right now. But it's one of those things where having those connections can also help, and trusting somebody is to take on a project like that. So.
Well, and he's having great success, and you recognize that you're not having success, you know. And
no,
so,
I suck at it.
In a certain sense, you write it off. You know what I mean? And I think that's the situation where it can work fine. But if you have an expectation that, hey man, no, this, you know, I really wish I was keeping these, you know, but maybe just for some reason I think I should do it, and then it doesn't work out. That's when stuff turns sour, and you see it on the, you know, the fauna boards, and it's just a mess and blah blah blah. I feel like in your situation, if you just say, hey man, we're playing with house money, if you turn this into something, that's fantastic. You know, they're not really a favorite of mine, and I think that's the under the critical difference, right, from being a super regular business, is that you have stuff that you like and you have stuff that you don't, and maybe you're the sort of person who is willing to keep stuff you don't like because it'll, you know, get you some money, or, you know, to fund other projects and things. Or maybe you're not. And if you're not, maybe that's a good spot to be saying, okay, I'll farm out the stuff I don't like. And if, you know, really at this point, it's a zero or a negative for me emotionally. So if we can turn it into something, then, you know, that's better than nothing.
Hey, any eggs are a positive thing. I mean, Eric got one clutch. Actually, there was one egg. And I'm like, that's one. I mean, dude. I know it sucks, but you still got one. I mean, we had our big female 2 years ago have 45 slugs and one good egg. And I was pissed off, but you know what? I had one. So it's kind of got to look at it that way. I was really fucking ass. But twinges. But the objective is of course, anything is positive. I believe it's like an aggravation kind of a scale. It's just Is it worth it to you, and how much aggravation is it to keep doing what you're doing? Like right now I have corn snakes, and the corn snakes breed, there's nothing you have to do. They're corn snakes, and I live in Pennsylvania. There's no heat on their cages. They get fed mice every once in a while, and they breed like bunny rabbits, and they have about, you know, 12 eggs per clutch. The eggs don't even need to go in the incubator. They go in a box in the room, and they hatch out perfect. So that's the way it is. And the reason that we're able to continue doing the corn snakes is because we can sell them at shows to the public as pets, because maybe a python like a carpet or a white lip or a scrub wouldn't make very good first pets for people out there. So that gets us that. And that maybe covers the table fees and lunch at a show. And that's, hey, whatever. That works for us. But if all of a sudden, say that corn snakes needed to be temperature controlled and they wouldn't breed every year, or it was difficult to breed them, but they didn't really demand any higher of a price, is it really worth to continue doing that if it's not a major project of yours?
Even if you decide, right, that you don't want to spend the effort at the show to, you know, sell someone a first snake on for $20 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
at some point you might reach that point where you just say, dude, one too many calls where the person said, hey, I fed it a frozen pinky and it regurged and now it's dead. What happened? And you say, I told you to thaw it. You know, like, you get one too many of those calls, and then you say it wasn't worth the $20. You know what I mean? Or maybe you say, man, I should have taken those to Outback and tipped the $8.
Just burned them all. Yeah,
yeah.
You know.
The thing is, it's all relative.
You know,
and it's funny because we've done that before, because I've gone through, like, trios of corn snakes where I just have the adults, they breed for, like, 2 years. Then I'm like, all right, any case, please get out. And then I sell all the corn snakes. And then, like, a year down the road, I'm like, God damn it, you know, nothing's selling at shows. Like, you know, we're not having the consistent sales at shows, so I should get more corn snakes. I end up buying more corn snakes. So it's like, God damn, I'm determined to keep the trio that I have right now. But for all I know, I could be calling, you know, Chris next week and be like, I'm selling the damn corn snakes. It pissed me off. So it's one of those things, but I've had customers who buy baby corn snakes. I had one customer bought a baby milk snake off of me. Just mere happenstance, I had this little baby milk snake, and I sold it to this guy at a Poughkeepsie show, which I only ever did twice, and he got my number off the card, and I heard from him probably once a week for about 2 months straight, phone call-wise, asking me what's going on with the milk snake, asking me this, and this. And, you know, I was very happy to educate him and talk to him about it, but I could definitely see it that it's somebody who, you know, could get aggravated about that stuff. Because there were a few times where he called, and I'm like, it's 10 o'clock at night. I don't want to talk to you right now. But I had to put on the face and talk to him. It's almost like, was it worth the $20 milk snake to deal with the customer service afterward? So I could see where that could go.
Yeah, but every customer has the potential to lead somewhere else. That guy might not
exactly have
gone anywhere, but the time that you spend with anybody, you know, he might be your
exactly
next biggest carpet enthusiast at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I talked about that before. It's kind of how we got into a lot of the different projects that we're into, is setting it up so people can, you know, keep coming back. Anyway, before I divulge all of Rogue's business secrets.
Your secret plans for your $1 million empire, Red.
Yeah,
yes,
we can't let other people
yes
get rich like us.
I will own Eric Burke at one point. It's
I'm
going to
retire next year.
Yeah. Oodles of money. So we're all going to Tinley in the Rogue private jet. So yeah, I depressed myself right now. Anyway,
And now when we get off the phone, Owen's going to be like, Chris, you need to find a jet and learn how to fly it.
Yeah, guys, yeah, someone's got to do something here. God damn it. So that's one thing. It almost seems like there's a lot of pitfalls with a partnership, but if you can make it work, you make it work. I know Ben and Justin, Ben lives in Virginia, and Justin, I believe, is still in Utah, and somehow they're still doing Australian Addiction, still going on strong. So,
I was stupid enough to not want to move to Florida like Eric said he should. So eventually I'm going to follow Eric's idea and I'm going to move to Florida. So we're going to see how long this works.
Go ahead. Just send me up baby white lips. So it's almost like that. Now, would you, in this kind of a business situation, would you consider, I know there's some people who do 50-50 split of the entire business. They're both 50% sole owners of the business, or would it almost feel like you don't want to get too involved with that? Like, in our kind of standpoint, I own 100% of Rogue. I own the company, and Chris's partnership is, he's there. So I don't think you even exist on paper. So
better tax benefits that way.
Exactly. Yeah, it's better tax benefits if Chris doesn't exist. So I almost feel like, is that another step you take in the whole partnership thing, is deciding whether or not to bring someone in? And what if that person has their own business on the side? Let's say in this magical world that we live in that Eric Burke were to merge with, I don't know, let's just throw something out there crazy, Zach Baez. So Zach and Eric merge. Do they become EB Darkside Exotics, or do they become Darkside Morelia? Do they just take EB Morelia? There's a lot of stuff you got to figure out and hammer out, and you don't want anybody to be put out or insulted. Plus, there comes a reputation that you might lose by dissolving one business as ahead of the other. If I were to join with somebody else and totally take their name, would it be hard for my customers to find Rogue again? I could throw up banners and ads everywhere else and say that Rogue has now changed its name to this. People don't read that shit. They just kind of go wherever they want. So there's a lot of things you need to think about if you're going to do a partnership. And it's kind of difficult. I can see where a lot of people are, like, on the fence about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most people who do that, right, haven't been that established. You know what I mean? Maybe you go to some shows and stuff. I don't think they'd even be to the level of Zach and Eric, you know, in terms of notoriety and stuff. And I feel like, largely, we're such a limited market that most of the people who are real serious will find you. I mean, heck, dude, you know, I'm sure you guys do the same thing. You go to the same, you have the same 20 sites favorited, and you just check them out all the time. So if you wrote on your Rogue site, hey, now we're, you know, it's Rogue, Dark Side Exotics, because I know that's where you'd go first. You know, that would be, I would check out your site. I would see that and say, oh, hey, that's cool. Certainly you could have some folks who don't use the internet, right? Those people still exist somehow. And, you know, they would go to a show, and maybe you don't go to that Poughkeepsie show anymore, and they couldn't find you, right? They would say, man, where is this guy? He never shows up, you know, and actually they were there, but you were there with Zach, so they didn't see you, or whatever, you know, that could happen. But I don't think that's really, I don't think that needs to be a huge concern, and I don't think it's the sort of thing that, certainly it's, you know, it's a plausible thing, but I don't think it would happen for the most part. You know what I mean? I think that would be, I think it'd be okay, especially because, I mean, heck, dude, I think most of the time, like, we have our core group of people who really check out our stuff all the time, whether it's Facebook, whether it's the website, whatever, and they're religious about it, and that's most of the people that, you know, are really coming to us. And those people would definitely, oh, hey, yeah, Owen's doing this thing now, or, you know, Owen and Chris are doing this thing now.
Yeah, I could see that. I almost want to have a experiment the next reptile show I do, just show up in like a different T-shirt with different business cards and all sort of stuff, and see how many Morelia people like stand in front of my table, freaked out, not knowing what to do. So,
that'd be pretty good.
Put a big picture of a ball python on my tablecloth and watch everybody. Would you be like, what? Write that down. We might try that. Anyway, so let's get into this. I got an email because I was asking a few people about topics for us to talk about, and the one topic I got here is what is an animal that is in your guys' collection that you would never expect to be there or never thought would be there when you started? Rob, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have. You guys know me. I don't have that much weird stuff, I guess. Mm-hmm. The rhinos and the therai. And I did just buy a pair of gray bands for the first time, which from that Robert Hansen list. And I tell you what, I think that's really the way to sell snakes, right, is to cultivate a list of people who are super interested. And when people see that email come through, they know that there are, you know, 30 like-minded people who are sitting there watching, and they've got overnight to figure out what they want to do. And next thing you know, you spent $450 on a pair of gray bands. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, if you're doing kind of small number stuff, but and the cocci, and I guess the surprise would be that at this point I have 5 and going on more chondros. I guess that would be the surprise on my end. Otherwise, homes and that's about it. So
I would probably disagree with you that the thing that I would not expect to be in my snake room at all would be the chondro, because I remember getting first started in snakes, and I really kind of liked the way the chondros looked, and I was told by a few people that they're, you know, animals that are always, they're going to die on you, they're going to be this, they're fragile, they're really, and I, for years, used to tell people that, you know, all arboreal snakes are fragile, they die on you, they're aggressive, da-da-da-da. So having the chondros as well as the Amazon tree boas were two animals that I used to avoid like the plague. Is just weird. Never expect to have them or like them as much as I did, or find out that the chondros, he's pretty much indestructible. I mean, I no matter what. He's always hungry. I was expecting having to, like, fight him and all of those stuff. I mean, a lot of times, I know
that
can still happen.
Are you talking about the skeleton one or the glass one or the one the buddy gave you? Which
The glass one is pretty thick glass. The bone one is fragile as shit. The one the buddy, it's kind of like a little tier system. Glass one's indestructible. I'd have to really spike it to break it. The live one is right around in the middle, and then the bone one is so fragile, I'm worried that I'm going to break it as it sits on my desk, which I love the fact that it's on my desk because people come to me wanting to buy car insurance, and then they see that there's a snake skeleton on my desk, and I get this kind of double take as they look down and look at me, and I enjoy that. So.
And your dad gets a hell of a kick out of it.
Dad hates it, but that's not my problem. He might be listening, so I have to watch.
That was really
so,
the greatest
yeah.
moment of the whole show's history. You realize that when your old man called in as what's his first name?
James, don't tempt that fate, all right? Because
what did he say? No, he said that. Yeah, this is Jim from Morgantown. That was great.
Jim
that,
from Morgantown.
That was
yeah.
Fantastic.
I almost got him a T-shirt that said that on it because he was so happy. So yeah. Just keep him. He likes to call in now on the anniversary and holiday shows just to pop by. So biggest regret ever was giving him the phone over for this point. I don't have control of that. Eric does. And Eric never
Eric
remembers his phone number. So Eric's like 484 number, and I'm like, God damn it! And then you know my old man pops up, and I got to deal with this for 5 minutes. So. And I tell him every time, if he calls, don't put him through, dude. And Eric just scampers around and does whatever he wants. So
Eric knows
anyway.
It's the best thing for the ratings that could possibly happen. I heard that one time he started asking me about that neurojet dropping a neurojag, and the next time, or the you know, in the next sentence he's saying, I thought you told me you had a date, and it's you know all this stuff.
Yeah. That one hurt. But the funniest one I had was with the prank caller who was asking about if he could kill a dinosaur with a gun. And Eric's like, I'm going to cut him off. Like, no, not right now, not yet. So, yeah.
You ever figure out who that
the fun things we have here. You know,
you ever figure out who that was, though?
No, of course not. I thought it was Behoff, but, you know, he swears it wasn't, which means maybe. So, but the funny thing is we're going to be doing, I think, in October, we'll be on the air for 3 years. So,
oh, my gosh.
Holy shit. I know, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
We were supposed to run out of topics after like a month.
You only have coastal carpet pythons, you know. That was pretty great.
God, those are the days. So, yeah, just coastal carpet pythons, and I knew what I was doing at the time. But... yeah.
Yeah, this is Owen. Eric invited me on. I've got 12 coastal carpets. That's deal.
That's it. Just 12 coastals. I refuse to listen to backlogged episodes just because I don't want to hear myself and my show naive. I mean, we had that one.
The holidays with Luke. Those were great shows, dude. I love
those. Those were great shows. I mean, we had that one episode where Eric was like deathly ill and. God, who was I interviewing? I can't remember right now. But it was a scrub show, and
it was the one you were talking to. He's down in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Damn it. Chris, start naming scrub people.
It wasn't David. It was,
See, Eric's screaming at his steering wheel right now.
No, bless heck, dude. I just told him he should have him back on.
I know. We're going to do that. Blake. It was Blake.
Blake, right. Blake Bauer, yeah.
Blake, yeah. We are going to do that again because I feel terrible because I had no idea what the fuck I was doing or what the hell scrubs were because we didn't have any at this point. We weren't engaged in scrubs. I didn't know what I was talking about. And... Eric was, like, vomiting on the other end of the phone, and he'd been looking forward to this episode, so I hadn't done any research because I knew Eric was going to take all of it. He drops dead. I'm stuck in front of this. It's, like, the third show we're doing. It was terrible. So, of course, we had to redo the Blake episode because we sucked. It was one of
honestly,
those things.
It's great to listen to. You know, I can understand why it's terrible for you, but it's pretty great. You're like rushing him through. He's like, he's naming species, and you're like, so
okay, next.
The next thing?
I didn't know
like,
how many there were.
Like four of them left.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was, God, I will never listen to that show. Oh, God. God, I'm sick. And you know what? It's like now, like with all the scrubs that we got and just hanging out with the scrubs and talking with Chris and doing this, I would have loved to know, I'd love to redo the episode. So, of course, we're going to redo it. It's just, it's one of those things that
right,
you thoroughly enjoy.
You'd be the one to answer this. I was listening to your show from January of last year. What's the scoop with David? Is he did you suck him back in as you swore you were?
He's on the fence. He's not going anywhere, but he's not loading up the room either. But he's got two of our scrubs right now actually just hanging on to him. I think he's constantly tempted. He's got a gorgeous holdback pair of Barnex. He still has that massive pair of Beox that
frustrates
the daylights out of them because they act like they're going to breed and then they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping that he has more luck than all of us put together and can finally come up with a male Kofiow.
Yeah, because he is our female Kofiow, I think, as well as our Rue male, and he's kind of hanging on to both of them in the hopes that some
Yeah, I remember Chris when he posted
sexes.
That on Facebook. That's a cool snake. I mean, they're neat critters for sure.
They are, and
yeah,
you know,
I think his goal is in order to not rack the numbers up again. He's primarily really just hanging on to anything rare and unusual that he can find at this point.
Well, that makes sense. And I mean, heck, you know, it's as long as he's keeping something, I think that's what you promised. So I think you won.
Yeah, and he's got this, and he's had the most success with scrubs that of anybody I know. So it's cool that he's not completely gone. And you know, if he does get luck with the Beox, or if he does find Kofiow male for our female and get some luck there, I mean, come on,
hold on.
We
went through this one time.
He's not going anywhere. I'm just going to go drive more scrubs to his house.
Yeah, come on now.
Hold on. So, Owen, did you hear me there? So we got to run through this one more time. The last show was a wreck. Kofiow. Kofiow.
God damn it. Kofiow. Kofiow. Sorry. Sorry.
I just got
to
ask
you. How many people tell me I pronounce things wrong? Let's not do this again. So.
Well, I mean, the last time it was pretty great. You started adding letters that didn't even exist. Like,
I do. I do.
Like,
it's one of my main things.
That's all right.
Morella
used to be Morella years ago.
Yep, there we go. It's over now.
Oh,
do they ever call you out back on the air?
Cool.
No, shut your damn mouth. So, some of those pictures surfaced years ago, or this year, and that was a horrible thing. Anyway.
Oh, you're talking about that little getup he was wearing at the zoo.
Yeah,
I saw those. That was pretty great.
So yeah, they seen that wig for you, whatever the hell that thing was.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chris? I think you look pretty cute in that little outfit.
I looked adorable. Are you kidding me? God, the amount of dates I went on. Anyway. So, but I will work on my pronunciation of things.
No, I just got a bunch of stones, dude. It's no worries.
Yeah, it's all good. But the Chris, what was something you didn't ever expect to have in your snake room?
Oh, that's tough because this is really everywhere that we thought we were going. I guess if I had to pick, I would have to say that that patternless Flamina type, just because I've never seen one in my life, and David was like, oh, I have this, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what that is. I'm not worried about it. And then when I finally bought a lot of his stuff, I'm like, oh, holy shit, I really have never seen one of those before.
Yeah. So. And that, she's gorgeous, so it was kind of cool to get something funky like that. I mean, it's almost like the funky animals that just kind of show up. Either they pop out of an egg or you get them through a purchase. It's always cool to have those. What was that one scrub that Dave brought to Carpet Fest, the big one?
I don't even, know.
We don't even know that one. See,
That's part of the exciting part of that animal is we really don't know what the heck it is. It partially resembles a bioc. It resembles a few other things, and we really just don't know. But he was great.
Yeah, which that's kind of cool when you get the kind of known,
that's
unknown animal.
Kind of cool. That's amazing. Like.
Yeah. You get the no background
in the
weird ones
that no one else has. That's pretty sweet. Hard to pair up, but pretty good.
If you ever want to set Owen off, tell him that you heard him keeping Venomous again.
Hold on. My biggest question was going to be, so what do you, Chris, want that Owen, so historically, right, there was always, Chris
shit,
wants this,
here
I don't
goes.
Want him to get this. What, you know, what is the item that you want or have that Owen is not yet on board with? I mean, he will. We know how malleable he is. He'll be on board eventually, but at this point, he's not on board. What you got?
Well, he really hates this patternless Moluccan that I have.
Oh, that's
Kamikaze,
right?
I hate that animal.
As far as stuff I want, I can't even pinpoint the animal, but I feel like every other day I say, we should get this, and he says, no.
But see, I wanted to be like a Dimeocephalus or something, like give me or Acrocordis. I mean, heck, give me something good here, you know?
I've had like half a dozen Helma Harris that I keep selling, and every time I try to keep them, he stops me, and then I have to sell it again. So I want the Helms, and I want Bolands. And for as amazing as Bolands are, everybody loves them.
That's the big one.
Owen is a closet Boland hater.
Yes.
Really?
That's the big one.
Wow, he's making
sure the
stuff that people are buying like crazy.
I know. That's Eric's doing. I just kind of go along with him. But Chris is always like, I want Bolands. And I'm like, I don't see any need for that right now. And that's the big one. So that would probably be the big one. I know I'm like losing face for everybody right now.
Well, I feel like I already have half of the other shit in the world that's not going to breed. So I might as well just
never breed. Yeah. So why don't we just go for the trifecta and get Helma Harris and Bolands and call it a day?
Owen, I think you've lost 18 Morelia points at this point.
Well, it wouldn't be a show without Eric if I wasn't losing half the Morelia points I gained for the year. So it's whatever. But that would probably be the ones because. Listen, if I had a snake building and we had tons of room, tons of money, and could do whatever, sure, what the hell, we can muck around with a bunch of Helma Harris or some Bolani, but I'm limited to what I can keep in my room. He's limited to what he can keep in his room. Bolans get huge, and Helma Harris never breed. So the objective is to get eggs. Now, if all the whitelips were breeding, and I mean like breeding like bunny rabbits, sure, we can pick another project that needs to be tweaked a little bit, but heaven forbid I want baby snakes. So
should we remind Owen right now that we keep olive pythons when he says that other snakes get too big?
Right, exactly. I mean, I tell you what, a bite from a 12-foot olive.
I like the olives. There's a difference there. Jeez. Yeah.
I mean, that was a horror show, dude. I think I told you about that when I was on the first time, so I won't go back and do it. But suffice it to say, man, she thought the arm looked good and, it's kind of a slow-mo bite and wrapped me up to the neck. And, man, I finally got her off, that was just the pent-up blood in my arm that came flowing out. That was a genuine horror show.
Oof. It was a slow-mo bite, too, because the olives that are here, they do that all the time. We're like, is this food? And then they just kind of bite down. And they're like, maybe. And then they just start wrapping up.
Right, the wrap is fast, but the bite itself is actually pretty slow. They're pretty deliberate snakes, but you just kind of watch it, and you get the head cock and say, I think she's about to bite me. And then she did, and wow, it was not the most fun ever.
Yeah. I could imagine that. The olives move very slowly, but everything is with a purpose. So, but they're awesome.
Although I will say that it A, horrified my roommates, and then B, when I told my wildlife bio teacher about it before class that morning, I think I horrified, you know, the entirety of my classmates, some of whom later became my fraternity brothers, and said, oh, you were the nut, you know, who was talking about getting nailed by this 12-foot snake.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean,
probably,
it had an impact, for sure.
Yeah, well, probably one of the first experiences I ever had with a adult snake was in the dorm room. Chris had brought his, because I didn't even own snakes when I met Chris. You know where I'm going with this. Chris had brought, for the weekend, his leucistic Texas rat, and he's like, this is my buddy, and it nails him in the chin, and he starts bleeding all over the place. And then a couple weeks after that, we go to his place, and he has a scrub python that's trying to kill him, and then an adult black-faced whalelet that chases him around the room. So, you know, my first exposure to snakes with this guy was nothing but violence and blood, and somehow I jumped into this crap, and so...
Dude, that was one of the coolest bites ever. I got nailed in the tip of the thumb by a southern scrub, and it broke a tooth off in my thumb. And it was weird, because I got bit, and there was no blood. And I'm like,
It
feels like I got bit. And then we pulled the tooth out, and it was like a slow-motion water fountain of blood.
Oh, God, it was terrible.
That was so awesome.
Oh, God, it was terrible.
That's fantastic.
And then if you listen to back episodes, Eric asks me way back when if there's a certain python that I would love to have in the room, and I say black-faced white lips because they chased my friend Chris around the room once, and it was awesome. So,
Chris, I know you first got some right back in that when they first started coming in 05, 06, first time in like 5 years they came in 05, 06, something like that, right?
Yeah, and I paid like $150 for them.
I know, right? That was pretty sweet. I got a bunch of those animals, too, and we sold them. But, I mean, those are, you know, big adults, and they were just fantastic. I mean, they're impressive snakes, for sure. I did take one bite up at Cameron's in the back of the neck from one of them, and that was kind of always the joke, is that I would just bleed all over his floor, and he'd say, get the fucking mop. You know, like, he was just tired of it. And I would just grab whatever, and he was like, dude, seriously, stop bleeding on my floor. they're fantastic animals, for sure.
Yeah.
And they can either on or off, man. They're either totally cool, like ridiculously cool, or they're, you know, they're aggro, for sure.
And it's not like a sex thing. It's not like we have, where all the males are chill and then the females are, you know, psycho or vice versa. We have really chill males and we have psychotic females, and then we have a really chill female and a psychotic, you know, male. It's just kind of luck of the draw, which kind of sucks.
I mean, I think the thing people don't know about those, and we've talked about it before, and I know I know Chris knows all about this, is that they bite sideways. Like, they have this sideways slashing bite.
Yeah, they do, especially if you think you have a hold of them, and it's almost like trying to wrestle with one of those monitors with a really long neck, which is how I got like my worst bite of my life, is from a blue tail monitor. Like you think you have a hold of them, and then all of a sudden they start swinging around sideways and they get you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's for sure. And other we're into funky biting snakes, right? So the Apodora, they're funny because they punch you. Like if you get bit. Even these wild ones, like they punch you with their face. And if you get a bite, it'll typically just be like their four front teeth if they have their mouth slightly open when they punch you. But it's like a drag. Huh. It's weird. But if a full-grown Apodora, if it's going to nail you, really it's just going to punch you like Mike Tyson, dude. Honestly,
Apodora might be moving down the list now. So...
don't get me wrong.
Did anybody catch that? I just moved it up the list and he moved it down the list?
He moved it down the list. This is how this shit goes.
Chris, this is what I'm trying to facilitate here. This is what I'm going for. So,
nothing can happen yet. So, it's It's one of those things.
I don't know.
Where,
was there some? There were some on Cameron's list last time. I think maybe they were off.
I know. I know. The problem is he and I both get Cameron's list in our respective emails. So I have 5 minutes to read it before
right,
my phone starts ringing.
Are you more of an email dude than he is? So you see it before he does?
Normally he sees it before me, just because, you know, it depends on the day. If I'm bogged down by work, I'll not see it, and he'll call me and be like, you should see the list. Or, you know, if he's bogged down by work, I'll call him. But there is usually the day is I open up the list and I start reading it, and I'm not done reading it when my phone rings and it's Chris telling me, you know, what's in the list.
We already got it.
Or sometimes I'm like, dude, there are Blackface Whalen's in the list. And he's like, oh, we already bought them.
He's
like,
yeah, we already bought them all.
Like,
okay.
Yeah, it's Tuesday.
They arrived Tuesday. Oh, all right then. It's like, you know, it's one of those situations where I kind of, all right, you know, that's, especially because we know if Cameron, the list hits and got to move. So it's one of those things that ends up happening where sometimes it's like, oh, yeah, two white lips and a helmet hair will be here. All right, oh, whatever. And then I get messages from people every once in a while. They're like, you know, I saw Blackface Whalen to the list. You know, did you guys get him? I'm like, maybe. So.
I'm telling you, dude, everyone is so spoiled on this. I remember when I had to buy a fucking fax machine and have this fucking fax machine in my studio apartment back in 2005 because he wouldn't email. He was like, no, everyone will pass it around then. I'm going to make it this fax deal. Dude, I had a studio apartment, $400 a month in Fort Collins, and I got a fucking fax machine so that Cameron could send me his list. Oh, my God.
I know, it's all spoiled with its shipping of reptiles. I remember a couple of my carpet pythons were shipped across the U.S. as fragile computer parts. Now there's a whole company that will do it and call it a snake while it goes. So it's one of those things that's like really cool, and all this other various stuff with all the fun jazz. But I didn't even get into it by the time of the mailing lists or the
I remember getting
magazine.
Those Blade Terp, you know, the mail Blades and stuff. And, I mean,
yeah.
I tell you what, on those lists, they look fucking spectacular, that green paper, you know, and stuff. And
you
go, man, that's a different it's a different era for sure, you know, and it's kind of nuts in a certain way.
Well,
but,
pissed off when I find an ad on Fauna and I call the guy and he's like, oh, no, it sold yesterday. I'm like, then delete your damn ad. But, you know, I can imagine getting that list in the mail and being like, oh, my God, and then calling him up and found out it sold a week ago. So, you know, it's
right.
– I imagine
or,
I'd lose
you know, the better thing, they have those little descriptions, right? And, you know, the Crutchfield lists are notorious for this. Each – or, you know, Hank Moltz even more. The best I've ever seen. Everyone's the best I've ever seen. I mean, those are the days when there's no pictures and stuff. And, man, I mean, honestly, who wouldn't have a pic? You see these ads today where someone tries to rock out the, oh, no camera, and it's like, bro, this ain't 2002. Like, that's not
everything has a camera in it. It's like, so.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's you still occasionally see those, and you just go, are you serious?
What is he thinking?
Like, who would do that? Yeah, like,
yeah.
You're joking. This is a joke. This is B-Hop. It's a joke.
Where is Chris B-Hop? Where is he? What's he doing right now? So yeah, it's but it's one of those things. Or you know, it's I almost feel like it's getting harder and harder for people to kind of pull fast ones on you when it comes to selling snakes. But there is always the occasional one of you know the animal that was shown isn't what showed up. Or recently this year we had
I hope
somebody.
That's really rare. To be honest with you, dude, I hope that
I do too.
I hope you're like I would be. Oh my God! Oh my God!
Well, I would lose my damn mind. But this year we had somebody over in England take a picture off our website of our red tiger male Orion, and was trying to sell him to people. And it's funny because Orion is here with me, and. Was it for sale in England? So it was one of those things where it just kind of crops up, and you got to watch for that. I mean, I don't put watermarks on my photos because I hate the people who have giant typhoons.
It looks tacky.
I hate it.
You know,
I would love to figure out how to do it and put it in a little corner, but you're lucky I took damn pictures, okay? So I'm not going to sit there now and put little watermarks in them. So it's just the way it is. And, you know, if somebody's going to take my animal and attempt to, you know, use him to sell something that clearly is not him, that's their problem because they're going to get caught and whatever. It's, you know, I'm not the one doing it, so.
Right, and you can't be responsible for that. I mean, people will steal your pictures. It happens, dude. I've been there. I've seen my stuff that same way. You can't worry about that. And I'm with you, dude. To me, the watermark thing or the image thing, I get why people do it. You know, I know at PE, you know, I worked there twice, and I know I know why it happens, but, man, it's tacky. It is. You know,
I don't like
especially,
it. I really don't.
Dude, especially when they put it over the animals. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. I want to see every inch of it. All right. I want to know everything. Yeah. And it's there are also the other people who actually don't even do watermarks. They just put like blatant text on the photo, and it's like, okay. So it's. I know you might not even cover up any of the animals. You might have it in the negative space, but
right.
it almost seems tacky to me.
It seems bad. And, I mean, dude, the other thing is when I see that stuff, I get this impression, and maybe I sincerely doubt I'm the only person who does this, but, like, dude, when I take pictures of stuff, I put it into my cell, and I check it out during the day myself. Like, I stare at my own fucking pictures of my own fucking snakes. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just think they're so awesome. Like, and if my name was in there
my
or my company
myself.
Or whatever was, you know, I would I wouldn't do that, you know? I mean, it's like... I just wouldn't. That, to me, just seems, again, I understand, and especially from, you know, sort of those businesses I know with PE and whatever, but I get where they're coming from, but that's a whole different mindset, right? That's just a whole different approach to your snakes, and, you know, I love Robin, I love Chad, but they definitely wouldn't sit there and stare at pictures of their own snakes on their cell phone at lunch. You know, that's just not the way it works.
Well, it's almost like if every herp nerd that is listening to us right now were to look at their own cell phone, I guarantee you that almost all of them have one of their snakes as the background image on their cell phone, as well as maybe like the screensaver on their computer or the background on their computer. And if it's not your snake, it's a snake you wish was your snake. So that's how that rolls, because I know – for the longest time, and Chris will attest this, I had a picture of one of Leary's tiger jaguars taped on my computer monitor in college because I wanted it. So, and now I think the rough scale is my background on my computer, and then the Conodros, the background on my cell phone, and they're probably going to be replaced by one of the Super Caramels soon. It is how it goes. It's a constant shift. But that's just how it is that, you know, if you're true – herp nut, of course you're going to have pictures of your snakes on things. I know Eric has one of his caramel zebras as a background of his, but I assume it's going to be an albino zebra jack soon. It's part of it. You know, of course you take pride in your pictures. And even if you suck at taking pictures, you still take pride in the animal that's in the picture. So, you know, it's obvious.
Couldn't be more with you, dude.
Yep.
So what's your white whale at this point? Like, we've talked about Chris and the thing that you would hate that if he got, but what's your deal?
Uh-huh. What would be the thing that he would hate if I got?
Yeah. Either he would hate that you got or just that you want to
get.
I feel like he's on board with most stuff. So what would just be, what's your thing? What's your next thing?
What would be the thing that you would absolutely hate if I got it? Because you're pretty much on board with everything I'm doing.
I'm on board with everything there is.
This is true.
Oh,
like, I could call him tomorrow and be like, we're getting leopard tortoise, and he'll be like, yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things. And, I mean, right now I'm babysitting a white throat monitor, which I'm about ready to get out of here because it's destroying the cage it's in. But I know Chris would be like, no, can we keep it? So it's one of those things. This is hard. What would you absolutely hate? This is like, you know,
and since
I'm
with you, I kind of, you know, from my impression of Chris, I think that's going to be really, that's going to rack you
hard.
So What could he approve of that you would want to get? What's your next thing?
What would he not approve of that I would want to get?
No, just what even would he approve of? Because I don't think there is such a thing he wouldn't approve of.
You would approve of matching up all the babies that we got that don't have pairs right now, you know, water pythons and rough scales and more chondros. So
Buddy hooked you with those, huh?
Buddy, that son of a bitch. I have to, me, Chris, Eric, and Zach are headed up to Buddy's at some point next month because I got to pick up my female chondro. Zach has to pick up a chondro. We assume Eric is going to buy like four chondros and
Chris that sounds about right,
is tannin bars. So,
is he getting rid of those? So he didn't have any luck with them.
We need an on-air thank you to Buddy for that because those tannin bars rock, and we lucked out because he really took care of us like he does with everything, and I'm looking forward to those more than almost anything.
Are you getting all of those animals?
Yes.
Do you get the proud animal and all that stuff?
Yeah, all five of the tens.
Wow, that's fantastic, dude. How many did you have already?
None. I don't have any pens.
Really? You had a pair, though, right? And then moved them on?
Yeah, I had a young pair, and we had added a ton of other stuff. I had some bigger shrubs and was just trying to make some room and regretted letting those go. So when this came up, I was pumped to get back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like them a lot. They're a bit psychotic relative to some other species, but they're pretty cool.
No,
I mean, and heck, the patterns are cool.
Alley, though.
I love psychotic things.
Yeah, they're psychotic.
I was hassling Ryan through Eric last week about his stuff. But, yeah, go for it.
But I came back into this stuff at the end of, like, 2011. I took a little break because something had come up. But I think I just got my first snake hook, like, 3 months ago.
This is true.
And now
I just use it
to do stupid things, like pick up wires that I drop behind cages.
Or scratch your back. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. But...
And Owen didn't give him away to his old lady or whatever, right? So that's
No, not yet. But Buddy really hooked us up with, first off, absolutely pulling the drug dealer thing on me and getting me into chondros like he threatened he would many, many moons ago.
I should probably note that the first tannin bars were also from Buddy, so this is tannin bars number 7 from him.
Man, he's working pretty good, dude.
Yeah, we're beating the shit here.
I really don't know how to
because he gave me the contra, and he's like, don't worry, because I'll make it off of the second and the third one you get. And I'm like, well, we'll see. And then, of course, I went back to him to buy the second one, and I'm like, holy crap, it's working. So it's, yeah. I'm limiting myself to 3, but no one believes me when I keep telling them that.
Oh, that's obviously false, dude. I don't know why you keep saying that.
Really,
you can insist on it, but, you know.
I can't. It's too many. So, but
what I would say out of that, what I wanted to talk about, if it's cool with you guys, is just, and Eric and I were talking about this earlier in the week, is just the only danger of situations, you know, I know everyone talks about, and we had talked about hell fucking, you know, an hour ago, the, you know, importance of maintaining a market price. The only danger is snakes like that one that you got from Buddy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that same snake, thought, man, that's killer, but I don't have $1,000 or $900 or whatever that he wanted for it. And, man, I'm the sort of person, I don't want to be seen as a time waster. So I don't even email folks on that stuff. I'm like, I don't have $1,000. I definitely can't send them $1,000 today. I don't even email. You know, I just don't do it because that's just who I am. And I know Eric's the same way. And so, like, if it had been, like, you know, half that or something, you know, then I might have shot him an email, might have bought that snake, and it wouldn't have been available for free to you. You know, and it's the downside of doing, you know, kind of the backdoor deals and stuff. You know, I get why people do it, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And I want to hear what you guys think about this, but it's just definitely an issue that, like, if if folks do that, if you say, nope, you know, I put it on my site for $1,000 or on Kingsnake for $1,000, you'll see a guy like me who says, well, I don't have $1,000, so I'm not going to email. I'm not a haggler, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to be a time waster, so I just don't even email. Whereas if you said, really, I would take 500, then you might have sold that snake to me.
Here's my thing, though. If you listed for, hey, I'm going to take this, but I'll go down to this, people aren't going to see the higher number. They're going to call you and try to get you even lower than your lower number. So you put the number up.
That's human nature.
Yeah.
I'm with
exactly.
you. I think that's true.
I'll do this at shows, online. Yeah, I mean, I'll do this in shows, and I'll do this online. I'll put the price up that I'm comfortable selling it for. But if somebody comes up to me and tries to haggle, I will normally budge. Now, there have been some days where people come up to me, and I think the price is so rock bottom, and they try haggling with me that I'll flat out tell them no. We had a Hycon Queensland carpet that was probably close to almost 2 years old. He'd been with us, and I had him up there for $100. And somebody came up to me and they're like, will you take 70? And I said, no. And they said, will you take 80? And I said, no. And they said, how about 90? I'm like, you're getting close. And then he finally will give you 100. I'm like, there you go. Now you can have him. And they bought him, and then they walked away. I mean, it's – and I'm never going to be one of the guys that says you can't throw a price out at me. And that's just something people need to understand is that, you know, you can throw prices at me. Now, when it comes to my own purchases, if I'm buying something from you for the first time, I normally just pay whatever price you're asking for it. Just do it. And then maybe the second time I come around, I'll start talking to you, and maybe I'll throw out a number to try to get it a little lower. Maybe the next time, here's the thing, is if I come back and I'm a repeat customer, you're going to lower it for me anyway, because at this point, you know who I am, you like me, and you lower it. If you hate me, you jack it up. So it's just what it is. I've seen that before, and of course I will lower prices for people who are coming back as repeat customers or who are friends of mine. So it's almost like don't be afraid to ask, but also don't be insulting. If I have something listed for $700, do not email me with the phrase of what's the best you can do for me if this is the first time I've ever spoken to you, because the best I can do for you, person I just met, is what is listed. If you're a friend of mine, the best I can do for you might be different. So you got to understand that. And
that's exactly the point, and it comes down to there's a right way and there's a wrong way to haggle.
Yeah.
I'll haggle with most anybody, but I also know the value of the person standing in front of me, and I'm prepared to not insult them with whatever comes out of my mouth.
Yeah.
And you kind of
I think
sounds like the wrong way
sense,
to say it,
I mean,
but you almost profile your vendors per se. If I'm standing in front of somebody who, you know, is a big name, there's a lot of value to that person, it's somebody I want a relationship with in the industry, I'm gonna pay full price because that's the start of earning their respect at some point.
Yeah.
Sure. No, I think that makes sense. And I mean, heck, Owen, I know what you're saying. What you're saying is that I should say $250 off whatever your listed price is. No, wait. Okay. What you're saying is that, like, what you're saying is we know each other. Exactly. I mean, you know, heck, I buy these, you know, Theri, these, you know, designer Theri from Janelle Lopez every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, and I'm sure it'll be the same this year, I just said, dude, I want this one, this one, this one, this one. You know, give me these six animals, what's the price? You know, and that's what I did. You know, I just said, hey, these are the six I want, what's the price? And I'm sure this year will be no different.
I mean, that's the spitting image of Eric and Nick at this point.
That's the spitting image of me and Eric, because Eric will phase out an animal when he gets some new shipment from Nick, and he'll email or he'll text me and be like, thinking about selling this, this is the price I'm thinking about putting it out for. And I'm like, okay. And then, like 2 minutes will go by, and the next text will be, this is what you can have it for. And I'm like, God damn it. So, you know, it's one of those things. And I'm like, let me think about it. And then, like, 5 minutes will go by, and I'll be like, fine. And then I'm pissed off for the rest of the day, but I got a fancy new Zebra Jaguar. So it's just how it goes, where when you build a relationship with someone, when you talk with somebody, when you buy from them, when you have relationships with them, of course they're going to give you a deal on it, because they're not going to want to do right by you. As like, hey man, you're we're cool, we're friends, you can take it for this much. Just don't tell anybody.
That was an albino zebra jag, right? Not just a zebra jag.
I have a zebra jag. He's got the albino zebra jag. I think I have my zebra jag.
That's going to be this year's purchase, right? You're going to just
No, God, no. I can't do the luck. Like that's oh. Still not much.
Okay, I didn't realize
you were getting the cross.
Okay.
The whole thing is I got my crosses. I got two of them, I think. Three. Anyway.
Well, what's the problem? What's the problem here then?
I want pure Darwin albinos. As I foray into albinos, I want a pair of pure Darwin albinos. That's what I want. Because then if I feel like mixing, I can do it myself because I have all the freaking ingredients. So I just want pure Darwin albinos so I can do that. Even if they're 100% heads. If you're out there and you have 100% head albino, pure Darwin, they're annoying you, I have some super caramels that you can trade me for. So.
Well, if you hadn't tossed it in as a trade, I think Nick and Terry were just, they were just about to call
they were,
you.
They were writing emails. Yeah. Nick, Terry, Todd, they're all like writing emails right now. But then I said trade, and they all just deleted them.
They said, I don't know. I don't know, buddy.
No, never mind. So it's one of those things where I kind of want to start with the pure stock. But Eric does tempt me something awful with a lot. And, I mean, because I've sold a few to him. He sold a few to me. It's just the way it goes. So I've taken his shit to the show and sold it all. And then, you know, didn't sell any of mine.
Didn't sell nothing of yours? Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite. I love when you give those recaps. I just say, wow, that's pretty great.
Yeah. Piss me off. But it's one of those things where and people, like I said, people have asked me how to build a relationship, the reptile community. So I've said, just talk to people, just go to the shows and don't be a dick. I mean, it's not that hard. So, yeah. I don't know how I did it.
The
I'm
other
an
question
asshole.
I wanted to ask you, I wanted to ask you, especially Chris, because of what the stuff you're working with, is, man, how do you press this stuff that just doesn't exist, right? So, like, this year I was, you know, how do you price stuff that doesn't exist? Like, you know, this year I tossed those homes together and I was like, man, I couldn't even imagine being lucky enough to produce some, but say it was, you know, and say, oh, you hatched six or seven little babies. Obviously, you want to keep a handful of those because that'll be absurd, and you'll have to get some cat with ink done, you know, to say, hey, first in the U.S. to breed them at least or whatever. But then, like, man, what would you even sell those babies for? Like, how do you even price stuff that shit that doesn't exist? You know what I mean? What would you do with that? I mean,
a few different things, in my opinion. And you've seen every range of this throughout the market. You've seen somebody who, you know, is the only one who has it, and they take so much pride in that they put an outrageous dollar sign on it. You know, an animal that, you know, just because they have it, all of a sudden it's a $10,000 animal.
Sure.
And then you see people,
which are the same as a wild caught one, right? Like,
you see some people and they just take pride in their breeding and they pretty much give their stuff away. We got all of our, you know, not that this was ever a high dollar animal, but we got all of our high contrast coastals for $50 because Dave Prada just liked to breed them.
Yep, and he wasn't really trying to sell them. So we got Pyro was, what, 50? And so was the first couple of high cons. And then we've been selling baby high cons for $200 flat over the past 3 years we produced them.
So for me, I mean, I don't want to sell, you know, I do like to take a little bit of pride in it, not to have a big head, but I'm not going to sell myself short. But I also don't want to go out and be a jackass because I put a ridiculous price tag. So I like to do a lot of behind-the-scenes type research before I even put it up, and that would start with, you know, we have essentially a private sector where I think a lot of this kind of stuff, if we produced it, could sell without being listed. So I think it kind of starts with conversation in the industry of, hey, you know, what would you pay for this? And I think you get a range of numbers from that, and you kind of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. I guess, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, what, you know,
I mean, because
we might as well. We're right here. Like, what would you say? You know, so it might be Nick, it might be me, it might be Eric. You know, someone produces Baby Holmes. What is the price? So they're what? A buck and what are they? $2.50 or are they $1.75? Something like that from Cameron for the Wild Ones. What's a, you know, what's a baby one?
What's a baby Helen Harris?
$2,500 a pair? Like, the first baby, what would it be?
To me, that's something that everybody, like, you almost get on a conference call with all these guys and figure it out together. It's kind of like the values in the eyes of the beholder at this point. What is it worth to you? Could you list them for a couple $100? Could you list them for $5,000? You could do any of them because you're the only guy who has it.
But those sales, like Chris said, are all done behind closed doors. That's where I hatch it out, and all of a sudden the top breeders of pythons are calling me, and they're throwing out a number that is way up there that I have no idea whether or not it is, you know, something I want to get or not, or sell or not, but they'll throw prices, or even animals. I mean, it might be one of those things where we produce Helms, and all of a sudden somebody like Nick or Paul Harris or something's calling and saying, listen, we'll hook you up with a bunch of new morphs of, you know, carbon python for these babies. Just give us a pair.
Holy
it might be worth our while to do that. So it's just one of those things
where... the other aspect of it, right, the other consideration relative to all that stuff would be, do you think there, certainly from a just this is fucking awesome approach, people would be interested? But, I mean, honestly, like, if I had some of those out and I said, hey, dude, you want to buy some of these, the expected turnaround would be, honestly, 6-7 years. Like, and so I think that has to come into play. And I think the same is true with the black white lip. Like, I'm just kind of, you know, shooting the shit relative to Holmes, like, because it's such a crazy example. But I mean, it's certainly true with all the stuff, you know, Site B is full of this question that I'm posing. You know, how much would the, you know, patternless, how much is a patternless Moluccan worth? You know, if you have it as a captured bred baby, what's that worth? I don't know, but that's Site B's business model. You know what I mean? Like, what do you even do with that? It's just crazy. And I want this to be fun and interesting, not boring, so I hope it is. But
No, you're fine. It's it is something you gotta contemplate, because, you know, if you're gonna do these higher end projects, I mean, I know that Eric potentially and a few other people out there might be hatching out some of the first carpet python combinations out there. And that's one thing is you never see a brand new morph hatches of carpet python. You never really see it for sale to the general public. You see the things that might make it for sale, but the big thing is usually sold, like I said, behind closed doors, or their agreements are made, or they trickle down here, or they're used as holdbacks. So I almost feel like if you were to produce a clutch of something as rare as Helms, you're going to keep most, if not all, the clutch anyway. And then any ones you do let go, you're not going to put an ad up on Kingsnake. Those people are going to find that. I mean,
yeah, they're going exactly where I want them to go, even if that's...
Exactly.
Like if it's, I don't know, Rob, if that's your thing, if I produced them and you wanted them, they're going to you regardless of what you want to pay at this point, because I care more about the project going forward versus making a few bucks off of it and sending them to a stranger.
Honestly, that's,
cause then here's the,
just,
here's
that's
the
right answer. Chris just gave the right answer.
Now we have to get Helms. So, yeah.
You know, no, that's the right answer. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the time that folks don't operate that way. You know what I mean? It's a bummer. Like, you see this stuff where it's like the best situation for that rare snake to go to is not the dude who's just sitting there with 2,500 bones to spend. You know what I mean? And that's what bums me out about the rare reptiles classified sometimes, to be honest, is I just say, man, you know, the person best situated to deal with those Gonyoselma I mean, Guy and Shovel people are notoriously cheap, you know? It is, I think it's because they're dealing with feeder snakes, you know?
I mean, a perfect example
or whatever,
right now,
you know, venomous
would be
stuff,
this,
right?
This Kofi owl scrub. You saw that I had her listed on the trader at some point for sale. She's one of, I don't know, five females in this page that I could think of.
Right? I mean, is that?
So at some point, I could have got some money for her, but at some point I just decided David wanted to keep her, and at some point I'm like, that's the right hands for her to be in. I could get some money, but I'd almost rather, you know, we just go in the right direction, because God forbid we actually find the male. I want her to be in the right place and ready.
Right.
And that's where we're shifting away from being a business. I guess it becomes the, you know, now we're full circle back to where I was kind of at in the beginning. It's just like, man, those are the best. You know what I mean? And that's what...
Well, you know, everyone's going to make their money. I mean, again, back to the whole Halmahera thing. If I have a clutch of Halmaharas, I'm going to keep some of them, and I'm going to let them go to various people that I want them to go to or who are higher-ups. And then, you know, of course, those captive breds are going to get old enough, and, you know, they're going to breed, and that's when you're going to get to see them at shows and on King Snake. So there's there's enough money in that kind of a project and then something like that to go around. So there's really no need to make somebody who is a friend of mine
like no money in that project, to be honest with you, because I think it's all based on where you want them to go. And I mean, shit, dude,
well,
if 5 to 6 years out, you know, like, they're awesome snakes, you know, and I love them. But I feel like the ultimate answer, right, is that both Chris and I do a lot of snakes that aren't worth, you know, they're worth everything and nothing at the same time.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Depending who is looking at the king snake ads, they're either worth a ton of money or nothing at all. But the thing is that if you were to be breeding Halmaharas and you were to get Halmaharas and start that project, and they were to be breeding consistently, it's what's the old thing of if you want someone to pave a road to your doorstep, build a better mousetrap. So if you were to all of a sudden just start pumping out captive born and bred Halmaharas, anybody who's ever wanted a Halmahera but didn't want to do it because they were wild caught or didn't want to do it because they're farm raised or wanted to Halmaharas because those are the only ones that are missing out of their scrub complex, well, they're all going to want them. Or so eventually there is going to be this wave of want that people are going to go to, and eventually that wave does die down. I mean, somebody and I were talking about how albino olives are going to be the next big thing, and I said, not really, because there's really only one place you can go with that. Now I have my albino olives. Hooray. And once all the people who want the albino olives have their albino olives, they're done.
Oh, and do you want me to be the super buzzkill where I say
do
that,
it.
Where I point out the foible with kind of everyone? I feel like, dude, that's the classic example of everyone saying, you know, except for Eric, who loves the Imbricata.
Oh, yeah,
everyone saying, oh, you know, oh, what do you want? Oh, I want Olimpelli. Dude, I'm with you. I think they're fucking fantastic. But I feel like once they're actually here, which will happen eventually, Nick will have them, Ryan will have them, I'll have them, and Chris will have them,
and
everyone
then it'll
else
be done.
Will be like, wow, these things suck. They're
yeah.
suck. You know what I mean?
That's it. Then it'll be done. I mean, it's like rough scale pythons. Everybody wanted them, and now they're going to start trickling down, and then I'll eventually have my two pairs, and I'll be good. So, anyways, gentlemen, what I have to say now is that we are about a minute out from being done. And I don't know if we have record time afterwards. I'm pretty sure we do. But why don't we wrap it up, and we'll move forward and play the commercial and everything and get it done. Rob, why don't you start with your contact info and what's going on and everybody where people can reach you.
Sure. RobertMStone@gmail.com, HighPlainsHerp.com, RhinoRats.com, whatever. All goes to the same place. Give me a call or hit me up.
Awesome. Chris, why don't you go ahead, plug us away.
You know what I wanted to say, since we were on the whitelist thing? We
Good.
Had messages about this the other day, but I don't know this guy real well, but I wanted to put a big congrats out to Steve Tillis.
Yes.
For having that having that random clutch of gold, and he did it pretty much in Iraq with NBA attempts.
Lucky. That's great.
You
I
had
mean,
him on the
now,
show, didn't you?
Now we got more to live up to. So
you had him on the show?
You had him on the
yes.
show.
Yes, we did. And I'm going to have him back so I can get
well,
as much
information.
Well, now he's coming
back.
Yeah, goddamn it. Humanly possible. You know, we'll do it. We'll get it done. So, but yeah, big congrats to Steve. Eric, if you are listening still, you're down in Florida. Get me those eggs and bring them back to me. And I will tell you
I
where I gave
the
Alpano Super.
I think it would be a good time to publicly remind Eric that when he was drunk, he promised us a pair of the Oxibles that Undercurrent Imports have, and he promised
he
them
did.
Before he realized they were $5,000 a pair.
That is true. Huh. Well, maybe he should get on that.
So now he's publicly obligated or he can't come back from Florida.
That is true. So, man, got called out on his own radio show. Jesus. Anyway, Chris, where do people go to contact you if they have questions about Rogue stuff?
I guess my email's chrisefoley@gmail.com, or they just go to you.
Yeah, or they just go to me and I send them to you. So, and what we'll... What we'll do is I'll do the rundown of our contact info here. You can reach us at rogue-reptiles.com or the Facebook page of Rogue Reptiles. See all the latest stuff we got coming up. We do have a show in July at the Lancaster Reptile and Bird Expo. I don't know why I'm doing this, but that one.
That's really
good. I think we have
everybody to come.
I'm sorry. Sorry. It's going to be great. Next show after that would probably be August Hamburg show, so we'll see everybody there. Just a reminder that Morelia Python Radios is brought to you in part by the letters Y and W and the number 6. And also that we are brought to you by MoreliaPythons.com, the top forum for Morelia on the net. We're also brought to you by ShipYourReptiles.com and the Reptile Report. You guys have heard the commercial in the beginning. We're going to have another one later. And if you are shipping your reptiles, it's a reminder that you can go and find Chris Behoff's 40% off coupon. You can go to the Carpet Python Classifieds Facebook page. It'll be on there. Do not pay full price when you can use one of his coupons. So that, I think, is all we have for everybody tonight. I will say good night to the guests. Thanks a lot for coming on, guys. I'll probably call you again when Eric decides to go on another vacation. So, but hopefully he doesn't do too much. So what I'll do now is I'm going to play out our commercial, and we will catch everybody next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Say goodnight, Rob and Chris. So,
yeah, no, next. Buddy.
We'll catch everybody next time.
Hey, Chad Brown here. You may remember me as a linebacker in the NFL or as a reptile breeder and the owner of Pro Exotic. I've been herping since I was a boy, and I've dedicated my life to advancing the industry and educating the community about the importance of reptiles. I also love to encourage the joy of breeding and keeping reptiles as a hobbyist, which is why my partner Robin Markland and I created the Reptile Report. The Reptile Report is our online news aggregation site bringing you the most up-to-date discussions from the reptile world. Visit thereptilereport.com every day to stay on top of the latest reptile news and information. We encourage you to visit the site and submit your exciting reptile news, photos, and links so we can feature outstanding breeders and hobbyists just like you. The Reptile Report offers powerful branding and marketing exposure for your business, and the best part is it's free. If you're a buyer or a breeder, you got to check out the Reptile Report Marketplace. The Marketplace is the reptile world's most complete buying and selling destination, full of features to help put you in touch with the perfect deal. Find exactly what you're looking for with our advanced search system. Search by sex, weight, morph, or other keywords, and use our Buy It Now option to buy that animal right now. Go to marketplace.thereptilereport.com and register your account for free. Be sure to link your Marketplace account to your Ship Your Reptiles account to earn free tokens with each shipping label you book. Use the Marketplace to sell your animals and supplies and maximize your exposure with a platinum ad that also gets fed to the Reptile Report and our powerful Marketplace Facebook page. Buying or selling? Use ShipYourReptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rates. ShipYourReptiles.com can also supply you with the materials needed to safely ship your animals successfully. Use ShipYourReptiles.com to take advantage of our discounted priority overnight shipping rates, the materials needed to ship your reptiles successfully, live customer support, and our live, on-time arrival insurance program. We got you covered. Visit thereptilereport.com to learn or share about the animals. Click on the link to the marketplace, find that perfect pet or breeder, then visit ShipReptiles.com to ship that animal anywhere in the United States. We are your one-stop shop for everything reptile related.